radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Drift Bar in the Heights. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Hello and welcome aboard. Gallant and George on a Friday. It is November 15th, 2024. Still seeing if I can be heard on the air.
You're good.
We're good now?
No, you were too loud.
Oh, too loud.
I don't want to blow people's eardrums out the whole show.
Normally, the way that I talk, people will tell me in a very, very polite manner by just turning a dial to the left that they want me to lower the volume. So look at that. Joe is just doing it to me right now.
No. I would never do that.
You just did it to me. Literally.
It's a microphone issue.
Now you literally turned the volume down on me.
Is this like the horns down people who are doing the dial thing to you?
Or
separate people?
Perhaps.
Okay.
Listen, we're cool with them, but I set the dialogue for the city. You know? We know this. That's what happened yesterday. Paul Gallant of the Gallant and George radio program set the dialogue for Houston Sports Talk. We'll talk about that in a moment, but we are live at Drift, your tropical escape in the Heights. This place rules. We have finally gotten fall weather. It is gorgeous outside. This is a fantastic place to watch sports. You got UFC 309 here tomorrow, college football. When college basketball season gets going, this is a fantastic place to be. It's the best patio in the Heights with patio weather. You want to get Christmas parties or company parties here, sign up while you still can. So, I made a lot of noise a couple of days ago by merely asking questions about D'Amico Ryans as head coach, and yesterday at his press conference, the Houston Texans head coach talked about some of the criticism that he's been receiving.
When it comes to the outside noise on decision making and play calling, all those things, that's the NFL, right? We'll always get that. I don't listen to it. I don't have time to spend on everybody's opinion on how we're running our team and what we're calling and what we're doing, right? As a NFL coach, you make decisions and you stick by the decisions that you make. And everybody, of course, being an NFL head coach, probably one of the only jobs where everybody critiques you on Monday, right? That's the only job. And besides the NFL head coach and the president, you probably get critiqued on every decision that you make because everybody else has all the answers right after the fact, but nobody has the answers in the heat of the battle, in the heat of the moment. We can all hit rewind as many times. We can slow it down as much as we want to, but that's why I'm here to make the decisions, and that's how it'll be.
Big Sarge Sports asked the question, and I'm guessing he asked that question because your boy was setting the dialogue for the city. No big deal. You can all take the free content I give you guys. But I'm wondering, Joe, if D'Amico was also thinking about perhaps other criticism, other outside noise, because over the last couple of weeks, the rabbit ears have been noticeable at his press conferences when he's not speaking in coach speak. He has mentioned a couple of times the idea that there's a narrative that they're not a good team, that there's an uproar about them not doing enough at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's clear like that someone is communicating to them or they're just listening to it and hearing it, and whether that's in local media or national media. Because if he, you know, even the national media perspective of this, like, as we were all kind of getting frustrated with the Texans, it felt like the national media was, it always takes them a little bit to catch on. They were still more generally positive about what was going on in Houston. Now you see articles where, you know, they're doing their top five coaches on the hot seat and they're naming Bobby Slowick as one of the top five guys. So, like, I think it's pretty clear, like, the noise is getting loud, and I'd imagine it's impossible to get away from all of it. Like, you can't just isolate yourself from the outside world forever.
Where do you think it's most coming from? Because I don't buy into the idea that he listens or watches. I like to think that no serious head coach is ever going to dive into the void, the black hole of the hot take-osphere. You know, I'd like to think that someone is bringing this to him. You've brought up before, maybe it's Texans PR. I'm wondering where this seeming sensitivity is coming from, though. Yeah,
even just like the, you know, because, especially with D'Amico, it's such a unique situation because being a former player here, you know, if you know, Cecil Shorts, when he's not doing his, you know, in-game stuff, I'm sure him and D'Amico are talking, or, you know, Travis Johnson and those guys who played with D'Amico who, you know, are
maybe
still around the franchise. Like, I don't know if, like, they're communicating it to him.
I doubt it would be that much.
I mean, it might just be like they're venting about being annoyed by it themselves, if anything.
But what's there to be annoyed by? Because everyone's right. Like, this has been bad the last 4 weeks. They have underachieved. No question about it. Everyone feels the same way about this team. A lot of people are checked out.
I think you also just, like, if you're D'Amico, you can assume that there's the frustration there. Like, even if no one's directly telling you, he's been in the game long enough. He knows. Like, he knows that what people are saying about this team right now, because it's obvious that the sunshine and rainbows has kind of fallen away a little bit, and or a lot of it, honestly, and that people are frustrated with the decision-making process of this team. And, you know, I think it really goes back to the offensive line. Like, that's really where I felt like we first started to hear the frustration with D'Amico, was when he was constantly being asked about that.
Yeah, and him constantly being positive about the offensive line. By the way, he was a little bit yesterday, too, talking about the new alignment that they've got, where Jared Patterson is the center and Juice Scruggs is over at left guard. And when you hear that, and then you just see the way that Tytus Howard and Laremy Tunsil are, I feel like at the first, annoyed this year, blaming the refs earlier this year for their issues in that Vikings game. And now I think they're just mad that they're getting any criticism whatsoever. I thought Tytus Howard was going to speak to the media yesterday. He did not. He did say on Sunday night that he was going to speak to them later. Oh, well, didn't happen. So now I wonder about those guys specifically. And, I mean, the outside noise is directed at the offensive line a lot. It's directed at Bobby Slowick a lot here, too. And, I mean, if we're taking a look at other places that you could maybe point it at and say, hey, where's D'Amico Ryans improved this year? I would point to a lot of people wondering why it is that they didn't go for it before letting Kyahmi Fairbairn kick that 58-yard field goal, which he hooked to the left. And look, Fairbairn's been great. But if you're kicking 14 field goals from 50-plus yards, is that giving you the best chance to win on a regular basis, taking the down situation out of it? Because I'm sure some of them were fourth and long, given the Texans' ability to shoot themselves in the foot when they get to the other side of the field. But 14 attempts from 50-plus with C.J. Stroud under center. It doesn't feel like D'Amico's getting more aggressive in year two with a quarterback who's no longer a rookie, who's supposedly one of the best in the game.
Yeah, and now part of that might just be the reality that, you know, he's doing what he thinks is best because of what he's seen from Bobby Slowick and CJ in this offense, that he doesn't have the faith that they're going to convert that fourth down, so they're just going to kick the field goal. You know, it's not – they don't have a tush push if it's, you know, fourth and short. You know, they don't have great protection on for a fourth and five at this point in the season. So part of that has got to be some kind of strategy. But early on, we did think D'Amico was going to be an overly aggressive coach. I mean, he went for it on his first fourth down conversion as a coach,
but
against the Ravens last year.
Right, and now this year, and part of it has to do with the fact that the bad teams are going for it on fourth a lot more than you, but they're in the bottom third of the NFL when it comes to fourth down attempts. So they haven't been as aggressive. They've been settling for field goals, and part of that is on the offense and the offensive line and Slowick and Stroud and all of that. But I'm looking for spots where D'Amico has taken a step from last year to this year. I would say the defense is swarmier. I feel like they're giving up less big play, so that's progress there. But you want to see it in totality, and this was a team that we all thought was going to have an explosive offense going into the year. I don't think injuries are a good enough excuse for the struggles they've had of late.
Yeah, when you look at the defense, like what they've already developed, and Nick Caserio obviously gets a lot of credit for this too, but what Kamara Lassiter has done so far this year, what you've gotten from Kalen Bullock so far this year, the adjustment to move Jalen Petrie you know, towards the line of scrimmage, even though in coverage it's tough. But in terms of, like, the run defense, he's been super valuable there. So I think that's where DeMeco deserves the most credit about improving this team, is that, you know, they didn't just say, we're going to roll out Jalen Petrie and Jimmy Ward at safety. We're going to try to improve that position. We don't think we need to add a veteran safety. So far, they've been very right about that. They didn't feel like they needed to bring back Steven Nelson or a veteran corner. They've been very right about that. And I think in general, even though, you know, the flashy stats might not be there, the defensive line's been pretty good this year. I mean, you've gotten really good production from guys like Tim Settle, who you just don't know about. So I think that's where you have to give the most credit, and that makes the most sense.
Where's the step forward?
I think the defense is better than last year.
But where's the step forward for DeMeco?
It's hard to say. I don't know, besides the defense being better, and I give him credit for that, like, as a franchise. I mean, you beat Buffalo, but you beat Cincinnati last year. There's not really, like, a clear step forward.
The Cincy win was more impressive than the Buffalo win. And, hey, look, Buffalo, they've won five straight since then. They look a lot better. They've obviously, though, made some changes where they added Amari Cooper. And I got a text here from the 737. Guys, what was Kansas City's record at this time last year? I'm just wondering if it was something similar. Rhetorical question it was. And I'm thinking maybe their season turned out okay. Houston is going to kick the bleep out of Dallas this weekend and get back on track. They will go into the playoffs winning. People are stupid. This texter continues. I'm a big Cowboys fan, so y'all are good to go. One more text from him. You guys lost your best receiver for a month. That would hurt any team in the league in a big way. He's back now, and y'all will start rolling, guarantee. Okay, fair, but, I mean, take a look at what the Chiefs have been doing this year when they lost, what, Rashee Rice and Hollywood Brown and Isaiah Pacheco. And, again, the offense hasn't been impressive, and partly due to the fact that they are always winning, you kind of give them the benefit of the doubt offensively when it has been a bit of a down year for Patrick Mahomes. But I have not seen a step forward from last year to this year with DeMeco Ryans, with C.J. Stroud. I think it's fair to ask questions about that, and I think it's strange. Maybe not strange. I don't like hearing DeMeco Ryans acknowledge the outside noise. I know he's being asked questions about it at his press conference, and he doesn't really have a choice there. But I think there's a lot of fair reasons to second guess right now. And here he is saying, like, well, people are always second guessing head coaches and the president of the United States.
And he's right. We do. It is the NFL. Like, there is no more critique positions in the United States than probably those two things, as the head coach of a NFL or college football team and then the president. Like we are going to criticize every single thing you do, rightfully so. But yeah, because even with the injuries, you know, it was so bad last year when Tank got hurt that even Nico being out there, like, it didn't save everything. You know, like, it didn't, like, so this year I thought one of the step forwards I was hoping to see was that if there was an injury on offense, to even though, yes, he was the number one wide receiver in the NFL when he got hurt, that your offense wouldn't get so stagnant. And I think you can clearly look at the second half of games and say that's where the Nico injury is not an excuse, because you were having success in the first half of football games. And the second half, you're not. Like, are they a better team this year? Probably. But are they a better team in the first half than the second half? Absolutely. And that's where we're not seeing the improvement. We're not seeing the in-game improvement stuff.
Right. That's where I'm at right now. He's Joe. I'm Paul. Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We are live at Drift in the Heights, where the South or Coast meets a true Texas ice house. Hell yeah. I love that tagline. All right. Coming up next, this game might be a little more winnable for the Dallas Cowboys than we thought. We'll tell you why next. Stay put here. Galan and George live at Drift in the Heights. 713-780-3776 to call. To text, you can join on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can join on Twitch at ESPN 975. Stay there.
2024 is wrapping up here very shortly. We're already halfway through November. So if you've been waiting, you know, if you didn't really get into the gym like you wanted to this year, and you didn't start working on your goals for 2024 until the very end, or you just didn't do it at all and you said you were going to, we've all been there. I've done that so many times in my life where, you know, you do your New Year's resolution and then you just don't do anything with it, maybe the first month or so. So don't wait till the start of 2025, because that's how New Year's resolutions don't really work, because you start early on and then you just kind of drift off early. So get in the gym right now. Don't wait till 2025. Go to OAthletic. OAthletic.com, OAthletic on Instagram, 767 North Shepherd in the Heights. Take one of their 100 classes that they offer during the week. Sign up for a personal trainer. All of that is at OAthletic and OAthletic.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Drift Bar in the Heights.
We did not have a great injury report for the Houston Texans before their game Monday against the Dallas Cowboys up in Arlington. We didn't see Derek Stingley, Kamari Lassiter, or Will Anderson, though we did see Nico Collins and Damian Pierce back at practice. We actually just got some better news moments ago. Derek Stingley back at practice for the Texans, as is Danico Autry, and you're also going to get Mario Edwards back from his substance of abuse suspension. Danielle Hunter, who was late to practice earlier, who was late to practice yesterday, he's there for practice too. The frustrating thing is no Will Anderson, Joe, no Kamari Lassiter. Will Anderson still dealing with that ankle injury that kept him out Sunday, that saw him leave the Jets game Thursday night early. Lassiter's dealing with a concussion. I doubt he plays. So there are some ways, I guess, that the Texans' defense will be more shorthanded, potentially give Cooper Rush a chance. Cooper Rush and the 3-1 Dallas Cowboys against our beloved 4-1 Houston Texans, who are 4-1 when Nico plays.
Yeah, the Will Anderson, they must just be like really nervous about his ankles or something, because it wasn't an ankle that kept him out last year, too. I think it was at one point when he got hurt. So I don't love that we're getting these repeat ankle injuries. I think we all kind of assumed he would be back this week, because sometimes when you're overly positive, I think as a coach, and like one of the things D'Amico, like, it's kind of Astros-ish of him, where you're giving somewhat positive updates that you're encouraged by what you're seeing from Will Anderson, then we all kind of make assumptions that Will Anderson's eventually going to play. And tonight looked like, or Monday night was a night where I thought he'd be back on the field. Kamari Lassiter, not a surprise. I mean, he has to go through a full practice to get back. So, I mean, at this point, I think we should safely assume, unless technically they're practicing tomorrow, but I don't know if they are. Mm-hmm. So I think they'll be okay. I mean, I guess we're going to get the Jeffrey Okuda experience.
Yeah, I have no idea what to expect. I do know that the Cowboys have one good wide receiver in CeeDee Lamb. I don't know that they have another. I also know that Cooper Rush hasn't been good.
Yeah.
To the point where people were actually wondering if they should play Trey Lance. They actually put Trey Lance in. And then they said, you know what? Let's not keep Trey Lance in. And they went back to Cooper Rush, who finished with less than 50 yards
badly. That's so bad.
It's very bad. But I don't think we can overlook the Dallas Cowboys. I think if you're the Houston Texans, you gotta learn from the tough times. And by the way, this is D'Amico Ryans, Houston Texans head coach, talking about that at his press conference yesterday.
We speak about where we are, and I always speak the truth in our team meetings, right, and let the guys know exactly where we are. And, yeah, we're going through a tough patch right now, but as I told our team, we need that. Like, we need to toughen up. We need to be mentally tougher. We need to figure out ways to finish games, and the only way to learn sometimes is through failure, right, and that strengthens you, that grows that stamina that you need, and it creates that resolve that you need to see, like, man, where I need to pick it up. Like, it's not all the way there, because if it was, we would have finished those games. So it teaches you, like, where you're lacking, and it shows, like, where we have to pick it up and finish. So I'm thankful for this moment, and I'm thankful for our guys to learn from this moment. I always talk about, whether it's win or loss, it's always a learning moment. It's always a teachable moment, and I feel like our guys have learned a lot, and now it's time for us to exhibit the growth that we've shown and what we've learned throughout these tough times.
I disagree. He's talking about learning a lot. We have yet to see the learning. It's not in action. I mean, they might be taking it in, but they're not able to execute said learning. Learn to finish games. You've had plenty of chances to learn to finish games, and this is where my D'Amico Ryan's criticism is coming from right now. I know everyone wants to blame Bobby Slocum on the offensive line, and you can blame C.J. Stroud for Sunday night, but I don't think D'Amico Ryan's is immune from any of this, because how are they learning? He's talking about how they're learning here. Where's the learning? Where is the learning?
Especially when, like, this team, like, a lot of their wins over the last 2 years, I think they've been great at the end of games. I mean, C.J. Stroud is...
Last year, they were awesome at the end of games.
Yeah, and they've got the Buffalo game this year where they, you know...
That wasn't awesome at the end. I mean, they were up 20-3 in that game.
No, well, see, it's almost... Yeah, I guess it's almost like two parts of the ending, right? Where it's like how you let the team crawl back in versus what happens on the final drive like we saw in that Buffalo game. But, yeah, they, like having a big lead and not squandering it is something that I think is a huge concern for the Texans right now. Between the Buffalo game and the Lions game, like you're up by a good amount of points in both, what, 17 and 19 points in those games, and you let the other team crawl back in. Like that has to change, and that has to be, and I think that's for D'Amico. Like, he needs to learn. Like maybe he's being too passive in those moments. Maybe he's not being aggressive enough.
It could be that I don't think they're learning from these experiences, and there's still time for them to learn, but good God, I mean, if it took you this long to learn in school, you would be taking the class again.
You'd be Tim Riggins. You'd be in college, or high school for ages.
But at least with Tim Riggins, you look the other way because he's so good at football. You're fine with him showing up to practice drunk or skipping out on practices. Because you know what he brings to the table. No, we're talking about, I mean, you're going to take this class again. And is it because you didn't show up for class and you weren't listening to D'Amico? Last night I was on the locker room with Landry Locker on YouTube. And after I left, Landry, I thought, said something pretty telling. You know, we hear about this swarm, special work ethic, and relentless mindset all the time. Laremy Tunsil's a captain. Does he embody that?
Nope.
Does Titus Howard take from Laremy Tunsil an awful lot? Talking about, like, oh, why isn't my guy first team all pro? Like, the offensive line doesn't really take to this. And I heard him say that, and I was like, bingo, you nailed it on the head. And these are the guys that need to learn from it. And okay, fine, maybe Kenyon Green was a lost cause here, but there's a general sense of apathy that I get from the offensive line, who is highly paid and have been an effing embarrassment this year. They have. You're paid $188 million in total salary between the five starters, and he's still one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the game? What is that?
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's the lack of accountability. It shows. Like, but you're right. Like, that's a great point by Landry. Like, they're not swarming.
They're not learning through failure either.
Yes.
If they're failing, you're supposed to learn from the failure. No, they're just getting up and saying, yeah, whatever. That is the sense that I get. And look, this is a minor thing, but I mean, they don't even really want to face us asking them questions after they lose. They basically make it very difficult to do so. And I get it. The locker room thing, it's weird for reporters to be in there. You call me a meat gazer or whatever, like Torrey Smith was saying about some of the guys that are in there. All I'm saying is we want to ask these guys questions, and the way that they kind of hide from it makes me feel like they don't believe that they should be questioned. That might not actually be what they're thinking, but that's sort of what it tells everybody. These guys have stunk, and yet they never really go on record to talk about it. They seemingly take their sweet time getting presentable, in quotation marks, so that anything they say is only going to be to the few reporters that they actually talk to, who seem to be rather friendly with them.
Yeah, who don't really, and then don't really ask, you know, hard questions. I mean, this goes back to the beginning of the season when the Texans were winning games. And the offensive line was struggling, and you could tell that they were frustrated with why they were being questioned. I mean, like,
yeah, it was
like,
ridiculous.
They didn't like even being asked how in a victory, you know, your quarterback's getting hit a ton too much, and it was clearly an early sign of a huge problem for the Texans that will last throughout this season. And they didn't want to answer those questions, so it's not a surprise. And like, I do think that, like, I know we're not the end all be all. I know the media is not. But I think you can tell a lot about a football player or an athlete when they are just, they hide from the media because they don't want to answer questions. Whether it's a guy, like if a guy was demanded
it's not
a trade.
Not on me.
If a guy demanded a trade and then was hiding from the media, we would crucify him. If a player is not playing well and then is not wanting to talk to the media.
Verbally, not physically.
Yes. Like, I think it shows kind of like that they don't want to answer for their failures. And now maybe that's because they really don't. And I think they've also made this clear, specifically Titus and Laremy, that when they answer questions, they deflect a lot. You know, they talk about winning your one-on-one matchups, and it feels like they're deflecting to the interior, offensive line, and saying, well, it's not my guys that are getting home to CJ. It's the guys between us, between, you know, Laremy and Titus that are causing these problems.
Mm-hmm. Here's a text from, I believe this is from the 409. I think it's strange that y'all and fans are acting like the season is over. Pause for a second. No one's acting like the season is over. There's plenty of time left, but this texture continues. Long way to go and playoff bound. Well, assuming that they take care of business, they will be a better team by the end of the season than they are now. I want to believe that, but to what D'Amico Ryans is saying about the learning is not happening. It is not being seen in action. They have not figured out how to close a game, and they have had so many reps of failure. I mean, we're getting closer to the point of walking away than we are of progress at this point in time.
Yeah, I want to believe that too, but I would ask this texter, like, give me an example of what makes you actually believe that besides, you know, hopeful fandom. Like what actually are we seeing that makes you think that just, is it just Nico Collins' return? That, like, everything is just gets fixed?
That's the hope right now.
But the thing is they still didn't score in the second half of games with Nico Collins.
Right, the Bills game specifically. Now, again, he was out of the Bills game in the second half, but you're right. Like, they struggled the first four games of the year.
Like, it just doesn't fix all your problems. And it'll definitely make them better. But when your next three opponents, they should go 3-0, and they should win easily in all of them. I mean, they'll probably be 5.5-point favorites at a bare minimum in each of the next three games. And you're going to get better at the season end when you play the Chiefs and the Ravens?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who cares if you beat the Dolphins and, was it, Titans in Week 18? Like, you have to perform well against good teams, and you've only beaten Buffalo. You've played four playoff teams this year, right? And you've lost three of those games to the NFC North. I mean...
On the NFC, I guess.
Yeah, like, I would love to believe that it's going to get better, but there's just, and the season's not over. Like, how are they going to fix the offensive line? Well, they passed on the trade deadline. We know it's hard. We know it doesn't happen, but they weren't able to make a move, and they brought in a bunch of guys who are nobodies, and the only reason why I know Zach Thomas's name is because Paul's funny. They didn't bring anyone in to, like, they can't bring anyone to help fix it. So, like, how are they going to fix it? Like, how are they actually going to be better? There's no tangible proof that it's going to get better this season.
Good question. I don't know. But
I got one for you, Paul. One thing, like, they want to talk about learning.
Yeah.
We saw at the end of the Lions game, whoever came in for Lassiter, I don't even know his name, was not good and was giving up easy chunk plays.
Kadar Holman, I think.
Yeah, you want to prove to me you've learned something, D'Amico? Derek Stingley Jr. follows C.D. Lamb for every single snap of this game. Because as soon as C.D. Lamb is on Holdman or Okuda, Cooper Rush is going to have the chance to torch you.
I think you should put his Dizal Shire on him like they did on Amon-Ra St. Brown.
That was crazy.
Well, listen, sometimes you got to live dangerously, you know?
And that was real dangerous.
It didn't work out so well. It's like those Florida men who play with gators and end up with their arm gone. He's Joe. I'm Paul. You want to jump in, 713-780-3776 to call, to text. We are at Drift in the Heights. We'll respond to a couple of your questions on the text line on the other side. Plus, we continue our countdown to Astros pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training in West Palm Beach, Florida. I am hoping that this guy reports to spring training, but they're going to have to make a tough decision about him. Galan and George, stay put.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Galant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Drift Bar in the Heights.
Couple of texts. We've been talking about some things that have been frustrating us with the Houston Texans. They play Monday night against the Dallas Cowboys. One texter asks, do you think Bobby Slowick will still get head coaching offers after this season? I say no. I don't know how you feel, Joe. I feel like you've been still thinking somebody's going to be dumb enough to try it.
I'm starting to lean no. I think a lot, like, they'll have to get better, you know, what they're talking about, learning, getting better quickly. It really will just depend on how many jobs open up at this point. Like, there's two open. We think there's going to be at least, like, three or four more. I mean, there's usually around 6 to 8 each year. But I'm at this point, I say no. Like, if you're when you start having a conversation about a coach being fired,
Yeah.
And local and national media are catching on to that being an idea, or even just putting someone on the hot seat. You don't rarely ever see that coach get an opportunity.
Generally not.
Another text. This is from the 832. Problem for the Texans, they'll make the playoffs as the fourth seed. We'll have to play the best non-division champion. Yeah, that's not ideal with all of the good teams in the AFC North. I mean, that means right now, technically, the Steelers are in first place at 7-2. Ravens are 7-3. The Bengals are 4-6. They have to win Sunday night against the Chargers, but if they take care of business the next 2 weeks, won't be easy. Chargers and Steelers, they play the Cowboys, Titans, Browns, and Broncos before the Steelers to wrap up the year. They got a lot of work to do, but 100%, you're probably going to have a tough out in the first week of the year unless you go on a run. A couple of texters also brought up 713-780-3776 to call, to text. The only way I start believing things are better is if they beat the brakes off the teams they play the next couple of weeks. That's the Cowboys. I forget if it's the Jaguars or Titans next, but those two, not close nail biters, but convincing wins by more scores. Another text there. I'm not understanding the blind optimism for a playoff run. The team was supposed to be one of the top five offenses and defenses according to preseason rankings. They've underperformed all year. At some point, you want to see progression, not regression, or the bare minimum staying stagnant. Bingo.
Yeah, I mean, the deep playoff run, like, because you're going to be the four seed in the AFC right now, you're going to have a tough – it's going to be really challenging. I mean, right now, you are going to play either the Ravens, the Steelers, or maybe the Chargers in the first round. And when you talk about questioning DeMeco, where did this all start? Like, what level of coach will DeMeco Ryans be?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can argue, but, I mean, Zach Taylor's been to a Super Bowl. So, like, I don't even know how you argue Zach Taylor or DeMeco over Zach Taylor right now. But if one of the Harbaughs is coming into town for the first round of the playoffs, you know the other team's got the better coach. And that's not a slight towards DeMeco.
Mm-hmm.
But just Jim and John are better coaches.
Yes.
And you don't – like, that's – when you're the four seed, like, in the AFC, you're going to be in a really tough spot to have a deep playoff run because just getting out of the first round – it sucks, and then you'd have to play the Chiefs in the second round, even if you were there.
He's Joe. I'm Paul. We are 88 days away from the Astros reporting to spring training in West Palm Beach, Florida. Give me that bone.
It's always Astros time in Houston. Are you ready to play?
A lot of people were wondering what it was going to be like if the Astros didn't win the division. I guess we'll never know.
We're counting you down to the Astros pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training in West Palm Beach.
We are wondering if the Astros will bring back Yusei Kikuchi. Per ESPN's Jeff Passan, Houston is very interested in having him return next year. Quote, Yusei Kikuchi, he's awfully popular too after shoving for Houston following a maligned trade from Toronto. The Astros want him back. The other teams expected to operate in the mid-tier pitching market. Cubs, Dodgers, Angels. And if they whiff on the bigger names, Blue Jays and Orioles could compete for his services.
I don't like the Blue Jays one. I think that's the worst.
That would be really funny if he went back.
You make a trade with a team and then the guy goes back immediately. That just sucks.
That would be really funny.
Because, like, you lose the prospects and the player and you got nothing. You got no pitching, you know, no playoff performances, and all of a sudden he's back on Toronto. Yeah, I mean, look, I think Jim Bowden, as we were kind of talking before the show, I was pulling up some stuff, and Jim Bowden, the former GM, was predicting 3 years, $42 million for Yusei Kikuchi. That sounds reasonable for the Astros to do. That doesn't feel like it breaks the bank necessarily for Jim Crane's wallet.
You would think it wouldn't, but of course they do have some limitations due to some bad contracts on the books that they cannot get rid of. I know they said that they're maybe interested in Justin Verlander. That might be them just being polite. There's somebody else, Joe, that you were hoping the Astros would be looking at?
Yeah, Roki Sasaki is a young pitcher coming over from Japan this year. He's going to get I don't think he's officially been posted yet. But he's doing this. He's doing it the same way Shohei Ohtani did it, where he's leaving early, so he has to sign for a much lower level contract than if he just would have come over at a later time. So
okay.
I just find it interesting that, like, you see these guys come over from Japan who are really talented, and the Astros are just never connected to it. Like I remember, you know, Jeremy going on, oh my gosh, what's this guy's name? The outfielder for the Boston Red Sox. I can't remember his name, but like these guys come over and the Astros, like, they're just not in that market. I just find it interesting.
Katsumoto, I think.
Yes. Like I find it interesting that they're not looking there for help when these
Matasaka
guys
Yoshida, my bad.
These guys are coming over from Japan and having success. I mean, we saw Umaga for the Cubs this last year be really good. Obviously, we have Ohtani. Yoshida was good his first year with Boston and bounced back a little bit this year after being a little more up and down. But they're just not in that game, really.
Well, maybe to what you were – we were talking about this before the show. Like we mentioned – what was it? Was it Friday or was it yesterday? No, it was yesterday where I guess the Astros have some announcement coming on the 18th. I mean, I would love it if they just randomly found some Japanese investors, a la the Seattle Mariners did when they got Nintendo, basically, to buy the team back in the day. I would love to have that, and then maybe you get some sweetheart deals for a Yusei Kikuchi or this fella that you're talking
about
here.
Yeah.
I think here's the tricky thing. The West Coast teams definitely have a higher Japanese-American population, and perhaps more of a, I don't know, sounds like a community or something like that you can sell these players on. Because it does feel like these guys are generally coming in to an entirely foreign atmosphere. And, you know, when your entire clubhouse doesn't speak the same language as you, probably difficult to make friends. But, hey, if Astros have Yusei Kikuchi back, that would help. I feel like this city has a larger Southeast Asian population than it is Japanese population, like people from Vietnam, etc. So, could be wrong on that. I'm honestly just this is me reading on history of the city. I know a lot of people came after the Vietnam War to this area specifically since it was a boom town. So that might be part of the reason that they maybe strike out when it comes to going after Japanese international players. But I've never really heard them mentioned in rumors for them, which is what I think you're saying, John.
Yeah, yeah. It's just they're just not interested. And, you know, Junior Bronco kind of brings up the point here. Like, I'm not going to read exactly what he said.
But, yeah.
But
they look for some. They'll basically raid the Caribbean. But on like the same level, as,
yeah.
Not to the same level that Pirates did.
I mean, they get these guys for like $100,000,
right.
And they're turning into good pitchers. Like,
yeah.
Like what they've done, like in the Dominican Republic and everything, is excellent in terms of scouting and recruiting. But you know, those guys also they're not available right away. Where a guy like Sasaki is going to be a guy that's going to be on your opening day roster. He's going to be in your rotation at the start of next season. So that's one of the he kind of solves a little bit of your if you lose Kikuchi problem. Immediately. So just something that I'm just intrigued by, like why certain major league teams seem to have no interest, especially because you can make a ton of money with the Japan media rights deal. You can get a lot more eyeballs on your team. And we saw what happened with the World Series this year. More people on average watch the World Series in Japan than they did in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's clearly like an incredible market there, you know, for when you have a Japanese player on your roster. So as a money driven revenue source, it's also huge for you. If you can have a bunch of, you know, Sasaki Astros jerseys, that'd be nice. I'm going to start calling him Saki if he signs with the Astros.
Well, that's racist.
I almost just said it like 10 times in the last second.
Saki. Well, it's probably not going to happen. But anyway.
It's not going to happen.
He's Joe and Paul, Galan and George, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. We are live at Drift all afternoon. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in if you want to weigh in on the Texans' lack of learning that's been going on. How do I reach these kids? Maybe you need a ruler. Pop, 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 pop. Up next, John Gruden. He is back, at least with Barstool Sports. And he's been pretty damn funny to begin his time with Barstool Sports. So here's a question that we have for you, and we're going to do a quick little draft. Me, Joe, and Sean back at Mission Control. Who would be the best former Houston coach to hire for ESPN Houston? Could be pelts on the wall, could be sheer entertainment factor. Who should we bring in? We'll discuss that next. Stay put.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Drift Bar in the Heights with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Is Trejavu a thing? Can we make it a thing?
Trejavu?
Trejavu.
Is there three of them out there?
There's three cats outside, and they all look exactly the same.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They're
so
cute. A
little family.
They're adorable. They might be related. They might not. They're looking at me right now as I talk. That's right. Come to me. I will be your father. I love cats.
Anyway. I do, too.
Listen, you might not like cats. There's just a lot of cats in the Heights, and I love it.
I like cats. I think it is very funny that they just, like, chill.
I love it.
I wonder what it's like when, like, the patio's
just vibing.
Packed.
Yeah,
like,
I do,
they're just,
too.
Like, hanging out there.
Still. I would hope so. I'd like to crack open a few with them.
Yeah.
You know?
Just get a little sip.
Yeah, get the cats a little hammered. Hell yeah, dude. Anyway, we're at Drift in the Heights. It's a beautiful day. This is really the best day to come out for anything ever in the history of mankind.
It was weird. This morning I woke up, my house was cold.
Yeah, I loved it.
I left
the window open, or my sliding door open last night, and I woke up, and I was like, oh, I can actually wear my robe around? Hell yeah. I'm a big robe guy, for those who don't know. John Gruden, he's a big canceled guy, but Barstool brought him back, and he is already throwing 100 back at Barstool. This is him on Pardon My Take. For those who don't know, I guess John Gruden's first job was at a Hooters.
We talked about your Fired Football Coaches Association. Is that the correct name for
it? Yes, yeah,
FFCA? The synthetic football team that you've built in a Tampa strip mall. I didn't know that you guys were essentially located in the headquarters of Hooters.
Well, at one time we were. Now I'm not.
Okay.
I have my own standalone building. I've graduated to higher levels.
Okay.
But when Hooters came around, my dad was coaching for the Bucks. I needed a summer job, and Hooters just showed up. This is like 1986. And I got a job at the original Hooters in Clearwater, Florida. I was a wing shaker, oyster shucker, beer keg changer. Best job I ever had. Then I moved on to Hillsboro Hooters, the number two Hooters. I was a backup college quarterback at Dayton. And I remember getting on the plane, going to training camp, crying. I didn't want to leave Hooters, man. I just want to work at Hooters. My dad said, get your ass on a plane.
Love it.
I love John Gruden. He's so different.
I mean,
he's such a different cat.
I don't love his emails.
No, don't love those.
But he is entertaining. I always felt he was a bit two-faced as a head coach with the Bucks. I was living in St. Pete in Tampa Bay while he was head coach. But it had us wondering after the show yesterday, now that John Gruden's back, who would be the best former Houston sports coach to hire here at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So we're going to do a little quick two-round draft. Sean Mapes back at Mission Control. You are on the clock first.
With the first pick in this, Houston coaches draft to hypothetically get hired by ESPN 97.5. Great name. I love it. With the first pick, I'm taking former Houston Oilers coach, and this is why it has to be hypothetical, Bum Phillips.
Ooh.
Okay.
It would be tough to hire him now.
Yes, it would.
He is no longer with us.
Could we get hologram Bum Phillips?
Yeah, AI or something.
Yeah.
We can do that. And any man that has a Wikipedia section where it's football career, coaching career, life, later life and family, death, and quotes. He has an entire... he has an entire section that is just quotes as a football coach. So give me Bum Phillips.
Okay. Paul, would you like to have a second?
Okay. I'm going to go along the same lines. We're going to talk about a former Houston Oilers coach. And I'm glad somebody on the Twitch brought it up. And look, there's so many options. But anyone remember Jerry Glanville?
Mm-hmm.
With the second overall pick, I am taking Jerry Glanville. So Jerry Glanville was a Houston Oilers coach. He was the head coach of them from, what was it? His coaching resume is so long. He was the head coach from 1985 to 1989. This is the man who coined the NFL means not for long. The exact quote, "This isn't college, you're not at a homecoming. This is NFL, which stands for not for long when you make them bleeping calls." He has been an analyst on TV. I forget what channel he was on, but he was on it for quite some time. And he has always been in his career somebody who's willing to talk the talk. So I think that Jerry Glanville would give you a little bit of like a punchiness, a little bit of an edge. And while, sure, everyone loves Bum Phillips, I think Jerry Glanville is going to push the envelope. So I'm thinking Jerry Glanville, second overall.
Better for the
still
social
coaching?
Clips?
Yeah, way better for the social clips.
He's still coaching?
At
Northwestern Oklahoma State.
He's the defensive coordinator.
That's awesome.
Wow. Once a coach, always a coach. Yeah.
That's correct. Then his previous stop was at something called Alabama Airborne.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's – I have no idea what this league is.
A flight school?
No, it's a football team. Oh.
He's been on Inside the NFL, the NFL Today on CBS, and Fox's coverage of the NFL too.
Mm. Major League Football is what he was the head coach of, the Alabama Airborne. Mm. All right, so I'm going to go with the third pick.
You got the fourth.
I'm going to leave football here for a second. I'm going to go – Jeff Van Gundy.
That's a good one.
He'd be so good. And he loves more than basketball.
That's true. And he goes off on tangents.
Yes.
I like that.
He's kind of all over the place at times. But I love when he was doing TV still and he would drop in, you know, a Texans little note or an Astros note during the World Series, things like that. It was always great. So Jeff Van Gundy with the third pick. And then with the fourth pick, I'm going to make a selection with a very specific show in mind.
Okay.
I am going to take a step aside here.
Okay.
I'm going to assume my roles only as the assistant program director. And with the fourth pick, to be the co-host of the new Gallant and O'Brien show.
I enjoy working with you, but I would love that show.
Yes, I'm hiring Bill O'Brien.
I mean, listen, we're actually, like, even with some of our back and forth, we're actually still on decent terms. I sent him a text after they played Syracuse.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, why didn't you throw the ball more? What the hell, dude? And he laughed at it. So, because they ran the ball for like 400 yards against Syracuse on Saturday. So I would enjoy that.
Yeah.
I think we would yell at each other.
Yeah, which teapot explodes first?
Oh, like, that's a great question. I think he would explode more than me, but I feel like he would be able to get under my skin more than I could get under his.
Yeah, I just feel like you would, like,
it would be a really loud and angry show.
But it'd be great. Like, Bill O'Brien and you would be hilarious doing a show together.
Oh, I appreciate that pick. But damn it, that was what I was going to take second. I waited a little bit too long. The Jerry Glanville suggestion on the Twitch was great. I was thinking Glanville, and I thought, okay, maybe you got to take him now. So we're talking about Houston sports coaches that we would want to hire here at ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Tom Herman would be too sensitive. Can't do that. Kelvin Sampson would be pretty fun. I feel like he would be pointed. I feel like he would give you some good lines from time to time. Definitely good for the older crowd because I think he'd be calling out the younger generation all the time. So he's certainly a possibility. But I got to go with my other guy. Not Bum Phillips. I got to go with Wade Phillips.
Yep.
Because, one, I enjoy Wade. Two, yeah. I've had Wade on the show before. We've had fun interactions over his time here. He is a guy who is – you definitely want to have a couple of hosts on, and you just want to let him chime in every now and then because he's pretty short and to the point, but everyone loves Wade Phillips. So, yeah, Wade Phillips is my second pick. I don't think he'll be happy that I picked Jerry Glanville over Wade, but hey.
Honestly, if you didn't pick it, I thought Sean was going to have to go back-to-back Phillips.
There is a chance that I still have one person. I had one person ahead on my big board, but if I thought maybe Paul was swerving after he named everyone he's ever coached for the Houston Cougars. I thought that he was going to swerve into who I was going to pick, and I think it's only right that I pick him as one of the biggest defenders of this man in his time in Houston, Dusty Baker.
Ooh,
come on down.
Oh, great pick.
Welcome to the show.
Think about Dusty.
That's a great pick.
We're all going super old. I mean, like, super in the past. The guy who was coaching the Astros last year. Give me Dusty Baker.
He would definitely have the best, just like, oh, yeah, I was hanging out with Jackie Robinson and Martin Luther King Jr. or something like that. Yeah. Like, I feel like he would just pull those out of his pocket.
But like, the thing is, like, I bet you he just doesn't tell half his stories.
I was hanging out with Kim Jong-un.
I guarantee you Dusty Baker has, like, Michael Jordan stories.
Yeah.
Like, he's just been around for so much. Like, I just imagine, like, NFL, NBA, he's got them all.
Mm.
Yeah, and he's an entertaining guy. Entertaining guy.
Some honorable mentions. Rudy T. Rudy T. Yeah. would be fantastic. Another, I mean, Nick Saban was an Oilers coach for a little bit of time. So,
yeah, I wasn't sure about, like, assistant coaches. And I feel like you kind
There's
of.
There's so many.
Yeah.
Right.
It would have been a little unfair to just, like, this guy was a, you know, a grad assistant on the Houston Cougars. So let me take him. So, yeah.
Anyway, that was inspired by John Gruden and his return to broadcasting. We're going to do another Gruden-themed draft. We're going to do Houston sports athletes at 145. Who would you draft for ESPN 97.5 and 92.5? We are hanging out at Drifts all afternoon. Coming up next, C.J. Stroud's confidence not shaken at all. Is he calling out Bobby Slowick with what he said yesterday? We'll discuss. Stick around.
ESPN. 97.5.